All right, welcome back to the Student Mindset Podcast. Today's guest is Tyler Foley. How are you doing today, Tyler?
Oh, I'm doing good, Lorenzo. I'm super happy to be here.
All right, let's get into it. For the listeners, you know, that may not know you, and for myself, can you kind of go into your background, where you came from, how you got into your industry that you're in now? Anything you can share with us to get us started?
Yeah, sure. So I am an author. Number one best-selling author, which is always super fun to say and not as hard as it sounds. I'm a public speaker trainer, and I got into this really randomly. Actually, I started acting on stage when I was 6 years old, and grew up in theater, moved into film and television in my later teens, got into some stunt work and performance, and just generally was around film and television doing various things from stand-in work to I was in front of the camera and behind the camera all for a lot of my developmental years anyways. And then after 25 years of being in the industry, I retired and went back to school, got an engineering discipline, started my own company. That company failed miserably. But through it, I had received some other training in safety. And so I started doing safety work as a safety consultant and safety professional. And that actually flourished a lot. And over the course of doing this safety consulting, I found that I ended up training a lot of people on how to deliver good safety meetings, toolbox talks and tailgate meetings and things like that. That morphed into teaching the general population, more specifically executives, CEOs, how to give better presentations, more engaging presentations. And that became a career unto itself. Now I give keynote presentations. About 25% of the keynotes that I present are on safety. 75% of the keynotes that I present are on just speaking in general. And then I have my number one best-selling book, The Power to Speak Naked, which is about speaking, as luck would have it. And I do a whole bunch of training courses where people come and hang out with me for 3 to 5 days and learn the art of stagecraft and how to be better, more engaging public speakers.
Yeah, I definitely want to dive into that too as well, because when I speak in front of a large group, that's exactly how I feel. I feel like I'm speaking naked. So that's awesome. I love that name, the title you got there. It seems like you pivoted a lot of times. Is this something that you just, were you not interested in some things, or just figured out like, hey, this is not for me. I'm going to try to do something else that I may be good at. And then did someone tell you that you're really great at giving presentations, or it was just, your business was just booming? How was that?
All of the above, actually. So I am somebody who is always willing to try a thing once. And if I like it, I'll do it again. And almost every one of the businesses that I've started and developed and been involved in and gotten into, I have done because of a love of that thing. So one of the first businesses I was ever involved in was actually piano tuning, as weird as it is. I helped my stepdad with his piano tuning business. I was an apprentice piano tuner in my late teens. And then when I moved to Vancouver and started really acting professionally, and that was my vocation of choice, I ended up getting involved with a couple of talent agencies, and I'm still a silent partner in one of them. And that's a business that I absolutely love. I'm not a good agent per se, mostly because that's one of those things where I really enjoy connecting people. So that's my joy and my love. And I absolutely love being able to say this person is perfect for this thing, and then match them together and have them do that thing. But being an agent sucked my will to live, because most of the time you're not giving your clients good news, you're giving them bad news, and it has nothing to do with them. That was one of the great gifts that I got from being a talent agent, was that I got to be on the other side of that phone call, and I realized that me booking a role had nothing to do with my talent. Me getting the audition had everything to do with my talent. If I didn't have the talent, I wouldn't get the audition. My talent had nothing to do with booking the role. And to this day, there are roles that I get where I'm like, sure, I have no idea why I booked that. And there are roles that I don't get, and I'm like, man, I have no idea why I didn't get that. but I do know that it had nothing to do with my talent level. And so the talent agency thing, although it was really fun, it was also really soul crushing. And so I enjoy being involved in the business, but I don't like doing that business. And my other business was an aerial survey firm. We did what our fancy proper name is orthophotos, which is just a really fancy way of saying Earth picture maps. And so if anybody's ever flipped on satellite view on Google, those are orthophotos, and that's what I did. I made pretty maps of the ground using pictures. And I love that. It's such a weird thing to be really good at, but I'm really good at making orthophotos. I have really good stereo vision, and I can make those images really well. But I am not a good businessman, or wasn't when I was running that. And for various reasons, that venture collapsed. And then I got really good at the safety thing. And yes, people said, you know, you're really good at this training. Like, especially in safety, right? If you're entertaining in safety, people are like, wow, that is the first safety course that I went to that it didn't feel like a lobotomy.
Yeah.
What is your secret sauce? And I was curious to know, what is my secret sauce? Why is this a good thing? And that was, you know, exploring that became the book and the training courses. And that's kind of how that all happened.
Yeah, that's awesome. In the beginning, you mentioned that you've been in front of the camera and behind the camera. If you had a preference, which one would you choose?
Oh, behind, hands down.
Behind, okay.
In front. Here's the thing. You can screw up behind the camera and nobody knows. You screw up in front of the camera, and not only does everybody know, it's recorded for eternity. So, you know, there's a reason there are blooper reels.
Yeah. And those ortho photos, I'm really interested to see what one would look like. Do you have like a portfolio or like Instagram where you like post these photos at all? Or is it a website?
No, because like literally flip on Google Earth and you'll see an example of what it was that I was doing. It may not necessarily be my work, because I was doing that in like 2010, 2011. And the thing with orthogrammetric work like that is that it's outdated basically by the time you fly it. Okay, right, because the world is constantly changing, which is why it's a great business model to get into if you do it right, because they constantly need updated photography. The difference is the technology was changing right around the time that I was doing it, and they were moving from analog film, like the cameras that we used to fly in these planes. So first of all, you're flying usually a single engine aircraft, like a prop plane, and you're going, sometimes you might have two props, but like, you know, it's a prop plane, and you're flying it at not low altitude, but not high altitude, like a medium altitude, like 8,000 feet, 10,000 feet, 12,000 feet. And you're taking pictures with these big, big cameras, massive cameras. And the film on the camera is, 13 inches wide. Yeah. And each image is usually 10 by 10 or 11 by 11, somewhere around there. And then you have the framing on top of it. And then you'd have to scan all of these rolls and rolls of film, and they're big, massive cans of film. And at the time they were transitioning into digital photography, and satellite imagery was getting into higher resolutions. And so you were able to just grab satellite imagery, and there's the business model was changing on how the base product was created. The end product is always the end product, and that's still in demand, but how that end product was created was changing, and I wasn't changing with the times.
If you had to give advice for someone starting a business or going into business for themselves, what's like the number one thing you learned or cautionary tales or something that someone could take away?
Surround yourself with people who are smarter than you. Mm-hmm. Even if you're a solopreneur, you're doing it on your own, find a mentor or mentors, plural, who have been there and done that and can help you. And don't be afraid to disagree with them, but don't completely dismiss their advice. You know, what worked for their one business may not work for your business, and you need to be smart enough to know when to say no. So doing the research on your own is important as well, but don't discount somebody's track record. If you know somebody who has built million or multi-million dollar enterprise, they probably knew what they were doing, and they may not understand your particular niche, but they definitely understand business. And I did a very poor job initially of A, gathering those smart minds, and B, listening to those smart minds when they said a thing. I remember my buddy Jason Corbett, who has run multiple million-dollar companies and sold multiple million-dollar companies, and is currently running one of the largest law firms in Asia and the largest law firm in Thailand. He said to me when I was doing the aerial photography that A, that I needed to bring my costs down. And he was one of the first people to be like, you need to explore this drone technology stuff. And I was like, you can't. And at the time you couldn't get licensed for the drones. And he's like, you're going to need to figure out a way to do that. And I wish to this day that I had followed through with that more, because now everybody's flying drones, and that's the fastest way to do that. And then half of these things are doing most of the calculations and the processing on the fly. So you run and fly an area, and all you have to do is check the imagery afterwards. You don't even have to do the calculations and run the adjustments. It's just, it's doing it on the fly. So I wish I had listened to that. If I could go back in time, Jason Corbett, if you're listening to this right now, you are right. You were right, as per usual.
That's so funny. It's good. It's I heard someone else tell me the same, similar, but then also like asking great questions. Like, you know, as a person going into business for yourself, like know the right questions to ask, and that goes hand in hand with listening to someone that's been there, done that, the expertise, which is one of the reasons why I started this podcast, is listening, you know, taking notes and listening from people who've been and done things and are successful. Number one bestseller. Let's get into that. what made you want to write a book? And then do you have some secrets you can give away? Not the whole book, but we'll definitely plug it in the notes for people to get. You know, let's kind of, I want to get into, you know, what made you want to write this book? And then maybe some actionable steps for the listeners to take away.
Yeah, that's easy. So what made me want to write the book was my agent told me that I had to. So I'd been speaking for a while, and both my agent and a couple of the promoters that I knew said, listen, you can only go so far just speaking. You need to have a program, which I developed. So that wasn't a problem. And they're like, but you need a book. No book, you're still going to be, you know, $1,000 speaker, which is nothing, you know, like that's a nothing speaker. And, you know, if you want to be making the five figures, you need to have a book, you know, five figure per engagement. And I went, okay, well, I want to make five figures for talking for 45 minutes. Like that's, you know, I would like to make six or seven figures for talking for 45 minutes. So, so if the start is the five figure mark, let's do this thing. And I basically took my training program that had already been developed, transcribed it, more specifically pulled the audio and then transcribed that. And that became the book. So I actually didn't write my book. I spoke my book, which is very easy. That was the quick way to, and I strongly recommend that to any entrepreneur who thinks they would like to have a book, but are not sure that they have the time to write it. Just speak it. There's so many voice to text options out there. That it's just crazy. So that's how my book was actually put together. And what prompted it was literally my agent telling me that I needed to have one, and subsequently making it happen so that I could book bigger, better, larger stages.
That's a great idea. I recently downloaded a speech to text just to like jot ideas down, like if I'm on a walk or something, because I feel like more creative when I'm speaking or when I'm on a walk, and I don't have, you know, time to write something down or type it in. So speak to text, I think that's a great idea. And then using it for a book, I think that's awesome. I got to try that.
Yeah. The number of spoken text memos that I have to myself is strike for that exact reason. I'll be somewhere and you're just nowhere convenient and nor with the time to even write it down. And so I've got, like, I have song lyrics in my phone. I have book ideas. social media posts, ideas, like all of that stuff. When I have it, I'm like, oh, do this thing now. And then I forget it. And then I go through my phone like a week later and I'm like, well, that was a good idea.
Yeah, that was a good idea.
Good job, Foley. Way to go.
I came up with that. Yeah, exactly. And then let's go to that second part of actionable steps for the person that, you know, may want to pick up your book and either listen to, is it on like a, where you can listen to it, or is it just reading like the
right
hard
now
copy?
It's print. There is an Audible version that is coming in. Where are we at right now? It should be out soon.
Okay.
I don't know exactly when the release date is because I'm waiting for the sound engineer to reformat it. There was a formatting issue with it, and so we need to get it into a different format for Audible to be able to upload it. But it will be available for, you know, for those who like their listening audiobooks soon. But right now it's in print and available in bookstores basically everywhere, which is a really handy thing because initially I had self-published the book because it was literally just an exercise so that I could say that I had a book and could sell it at large conventions and mostly give it away, to be really honest. Like it was designed to be like a free gift or gift with purchase kind of deal. And it got into the hands of my publisher, and David over at Morgan James liked it. He was like, hey, you know, would you like to explore what it would be like to have this as a traditionally published book? And I said, yeah, why would I argue with that? Do it. And so he picked it up, and now it's in bookstores, you know, around the world, actually. Like, wow. It's in multiple countries and multiple stores too. So
that's awesome. What is maybe something that, you know, the listener can take away from it? Probably like a lesson or, something that they can put into practice. I think when it comes to speaking, is it comes to something like that? Yeah.
Well, I think the most actionable thing that they can take away from it, or first of all, the biggest lesson is that they're actually not afraid of public speaking. Almost no one on the planet is actually afraid of public speaking, or commerce as we know it would collapse and society would crumble because no one would be able to communicate because we speak in public every day. I like to point out, you know, people are like, oh no, I'm afraid to speak in public. Oh, I'm terrified to speak in front of a stranger. Oh, I can't ask for what I want. And then I go, have you ever been to a restaurant? And they go, yes. And I'm like, and did you know your wait staff before you ordered your food? Oh, no. And I'm like, and were there other people in the restaurant when you ordered food? Oh, yes. And did you order food that you wanted, that you liked to eat? Oh, yes. And did you get it? Oh, yes. Well, then you're not afraid to speak in public because you were in public in a restaurant and there are other people there and you spoke there. And you're not afraid to speak to strangers because you didn't know your wait staff and they were stranger to you, and yet you were able to speak to them quite comfortably and ask for what you wanted, and your steak tartare came to you exactly as requested. So this notion that we're afraid to speak in public, that we're afraid to speak to strangers, that we're afraid to ask for what we want, all of that is null and void for anybody who's ever been to a restaurant. The reality is most people are afraid of public judgment. Mm. They're afraid that when they say a thing in a public space or in a public forum, that their words are going to be negatively construed, or that their people are going to judge them. And I find it amazing because all of these people who are afraid to speak and articulate out in front of people's faces are incredibly comfortable spouting the same thing from the comfort of their keyboard on social media.
Yeah.
So if you can say it on Facebook, you can say it to in front of strangers. I promise you that that's a thing. And the same as on social media, you're going to have the people who like it and you're going to have the trolls. Your job is to not care about either, to be quite honest. Doesn't matter who likes it and it doesn't matter who doesn't like it. What matters is that what you're saying, you believe. The danger comes when you start spouting stuff that you don't believe or you don't fully comprehend or you don't truly understand, because then it's really hard to defend it.
Mm.
If you can't defend your thing, you shouldn't be saying. But those are all things that we go over in the book. and mostly tackling that misconception that people are afraid to speak in public, and really it's that they're afraid of public judgment. And so how to overcome that? The first thing is to recognize that the audience is on your side. Almost no one ever goes to any form of presentation, whether that's a lecture or a seminar or a training thing, or even for entertainment, like a live play or a movie. Nobody sits in an auditorium with other human beings, even a boardroom. Like your boss says, we have to go over the third quarter sales statistics. Nobody sits in any kind of forum and thinks to themselves just before the presenter comes up or just before the movie goes on or just before the curtain rises, thinks, man, I hope this sucks. I really hope that whoever Lorenzo brought on today, you know, that if when I'm listening to the student mindset that this Tyler Foley guy is just awful and that Lorenzo and him have a horrible, horrible conversation and the dude doesn't know what he's talking about and he forgets half of his stuff and goes, and a lot, you know, like nobody thinks that.
Yeah.
It is not the reality. And the reality is we just, you know, the expectation is that whoever is speaking is the expert or we wouldn't be there. And literally we just wouldn't show up. So the audience is on your side. If you've been asked to speak, you are the expert because we don't ask second best to speak.
Mm.
We get the best of the best and the brightest of the brightest, you know, even if it is only for the time. And that's the other thing that we like to go through over the book is that comparison to others is going to be your kryptonite. You will never succeed if you're constantly comparing yourself to other individuals. You can only compare yourself to you. How are you on this journey? Where are you at? What makes you unique and special? I am never going to be Tony Robbins. You know, I've had the joy and pleasure of being on a stage that he was on, but I am not Tony. Tony and I speak on totally vastly different things. We have different styles, different techniques. And although his is a career path and trajectory that I would like to emulate and simulate, because I mean, who wouldn't want to be,
right,
you know, the head of 20 plus countries and a multi-billion-dollar industries, be a multimillionaire, be respected amongst peers, literally be a giant in the industry? Like, who wouldn't want that? Of course I want that, but I'm not going to be Tony, and I can't compare myself to Tony, because for every me looking up at Tony Robbins or Phil Town or, you know, any of those, you know, Brian Tracy, Darren Hardy, all these great speakers and trainers, Les Brown, oh man, is he a good speaker. And yeah. I've had a joy and privilege of sharing stage with Les as well.
Wow.
You know, they are their own individuals and I can only be Tyler Foley. Like that is my job, to be me, the best Tyler Foley that I can. And for every me looking up at these greats, there is somebody looking at me going, oh, I wish I could do what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and instead of me focusing on either one of those, right? I love, by the way, the name of your show, The Student Mindset, because I believe strongly that we need to be three things at the same time in any given moment for there to be growth in our lives. We must first and foremost be a student. Mm-hmm. We constantly need to be learning. That is part of growth. That is a growth mindset. If we're not growing, we're contracting. We need to constantly be learning. In order to support that learning, we need to have peers who can support us. So we need to not only be a student, but we need to be a peer. And to truly understand if we have mastered a skill set that we are trying to learn, we also need to be a teacher. So we need to teach the skills that we have mastered to somebody else who is struggling to learn that thing. We need a peer group to support us in being better teachers and better students. And then we need to be students ourselves and constantly be learning. And the only way to do that is to be comfortable in yourself and do a real, real, true analysis of where you're at. You know, what is that gap analysis? What are my strengths? What is my skill set? What do I need to strengthen? What do I not need to strengthen? What do I just want to tinker around with just because it's fun? Like, I have been a musician basically all my life. I started playing keyboard around 6 years old. I started playing the drums around 10 years old. I am not good at either one of those things. It's not a failure on my part. It's just not a skill that I'm really good at, but I'm not bad at it either. I am a very good amateur keyboard player and a mediocre drummer. And I work on it every day. Like, I love sitting down and working on the keyboard, but it's not a priority for me. It's not a focus, and it's not a thing that's a detriment to me. Like, at no point in my life have I been like, if only I played drums better, my life would be complete. You know, it's just one of those things that, you know, would it be nice to be able to play a little bit more complex rhythm on the skins? Absolutely. Would it be nice to be able to sit down and riff some, you know, maybe jazz melodies on a keyboard instead of being very pop music oriented? Absolutely. But do I need to do it? No. No. My gap analysis is, you know, business. Like, do I need to learn more about how to properly run a business? Yes. Even though I have successfully run my current business for 7 years, I'm still, you know, a single employee with 4 to 5 subcontractors. You know, my mm-hmm. business is not this massive 8-figure endeavor currently.
Mm-hmm.
Would I like it to be there? Absolutely. Do I need to learn more? Absolutely. So, you know, that is my focus right now in what I am learning, what my growth is.
Man, you said so much good stuff there. I can't wait to like go back and listen to this and unpack it myself. Because, you know, one of the most, and I appreciate your, you know, compliment on the name. I really, really focused on what, when I was creating the show, what I want to name it. And, you know, and it goes back into discovering my why of why am I starting this podcast? Why am I interviewing people? Can I do this by myself? Do I want to do it by myself? Do I think I have all the knowledge? Am I the expert myself on all things? No, I'm not. So I want to learn and, you know, hear from other experts or have, you know, different experiences, different parts of the world. And that's what I'm loving it so far. And I like that you talked about being the student, and then being the teacher, the flip side, because I was talking to someone else about this the other day is, you know, you can be selfish and gaining all this knowledge to yourself, but then I feel like you're kind of complacent there. You know, are you really the expert until you can go and pour it into someone else and to truly, you know, either be the mentor yourself to someone else, have them grow and have them flourish. And that might be a different kind of success than your own success. And that's awesome. Well, go ahead. Sorry.
But a friend of mine, Robert Riopel, you know, always says that, you know, you haven't mastered a skill set until you can teach it. And I think of what Brian Tracy says, you don't truly know a subject until you have 20 words to describe each single word. And although I don't fully agree with everything that Brian says on that topic, because I think there are only so many words in the English language, the sentiment to what he's saying is true in that if you are stuck with the same soundbite over and over again and can't expand beyond that, you actually don't know that subject. But if you can freely discuss a subject from multiple angles, using multiple descriptors in multiple ways, then you truly have mastered that subject, or at least have a significant understanding over someone else. I'm always skeptical of anybody who is a master of a subject. You know, I've been public speaking for 37 years.
Wow.
I am good at it. I am not a master of it. And even the people who are, you know, whose careers I look as guideposts, I don't know that they're masters of it either, you know, because every one of them can get better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the other thing too. One of the things that I've really enjoyed, one of the people that I've had the privilege of speaking with and learning from is Dr. John DeMartini. And he has an excellent. He has multiple courses. I think he's over like 30 different courses that he teaches, but the one, like, kind of his introductory course is called Breakthrough Experience. And one of the things that I love about what he teaches in that, and he teaches it in other different platforms, but the Breakthrough Experience really highlights it, is that we as human beings are not just any one thing. There is a yin and yang to the world. And he does this fun exercise where, you know, you pick somebody who you've put on a pedestal, like who's your hero, who's the one person, and you write down all of the positive traits about that person, why you idolize them. And then you write down all the traits about you, why you feel that you are less than this person, right? So you're propping up this person and you're putting yourself down. And then you go, what are times that this person who you're putting on a pedestal has done some of the things that you are putting yourself down for?
Wow.
And you go, oh yeah, no, they did. And then flip side to that, when are times where you have done some of these things that this person that you idolize has done as well? It may not be to the same degree or to the same level, but when have you accomplished that? And then you write that down, and all of a sudden you see that a person isn't their accomplishments. The accomplishments are a reflection of the person, and that we've all done things in our life that we are proud of, and we have all done things in our life that we are ashamed of. And neither one of those defines us. They are just experiences within our life. And he does this really amazing breakdown to have a breakthrough, hence the breakthrough experience, where you realize that we all are just experiencing this human condition from our own lens, unique to ourselves and how we perceive it, but shared in an experience as humanity, that we all do these things. You know, we all love and hate. You know, we all experience joy and sorrow, and that the one emotion does not define us, that it's the experience of all emotions that makes us human.
Wow, man, I love that. That's so good. As we kind of wrap up here, we got about less than 6 minutes. Is there anything I didn't get to ask you, or something you want to, you know, put across to the listeners? And if not, you know, where are you most active on, you know, social media or your website, or where can you plug yourself for the listeners to find you?
Oh, we'll get the plug in. You didn't ask me what my favorite food was, Lorenzo. I'm disappointed by that, because now your audience will never know that fettuccine Alfredo is the answer.
Yes, that's also one of my favorites of all time.
So good. A real proper Alfredo sauce too, where they, you know, you got multiple cheeses and a good thick sauce on a thick noodle too. That's what I like about fettuccine. Yes. But no, if anybody is interested and wants to reach out to me, learn more, the best place they can go is SeanTylerFoley.com. And Sean is spelled the proper Irish way, SeanTylerFoley.com. Tell them Tyler sent you. Because I don't know who Sean is. That's some guy I don't answer to, but Sean Tyler or Tyler, I know. So say that Tyler sent you, and particularly if they're coming, let me know that you know about me through Lorenzo, and make sure that you mention the student mindset. And anybody who comes in through your show, I'm happy to give them some gifts. But I would ask that they do me a favor first, if you don't mind, Lorenzo, before coming to my website. They're already listening to the student mindset. So they're already listening to your content. They're coming to you. You know, they're listening to your episodes. They're enjoying and they're consuming what you are providing. And if they have not done so yet, I would ask that they hit pause on whatever device they're listening to this on right now and give you a 5-star review. But be specific. Why do you keep coming back? Why do you listen to the student mindset? What was your favorite episode? What was your favorite guest? What was your favorite takeaway? What was something that you maybe liked about this episode? What was a previous episode that you enjoyed? Be specific, because that way Lorenzo can serve you better by putting in content that is similar to that, and that will help him and help you. So if you have not done so yet, listener, this is you. Hit pause right now. Give the student mindset a 5-star review. Be specific on why you're doing it. And if you can do that, if you come over to my website, SeanTylerFoley.com, I would be happy to give you a free PDF download of my book, give you my Drop the Mic digital training course that's self-paced online, so that you can master some of these basic skills of public speaking. I also give everybody who comes through that way a 20-minute one-on-one session just to see what I can do to help you. If there is anything I can help you, if there's nothing I can do to help you, I have a massive Rolodex because I work with a lot of the top minds in the world, and I'm always happy to make that connection. And they can come and join my Facebook group, which is where I'm most active. And that is the Endless Stages Facebook group. But all of those links will come if you come over to SeanTylerFoley.com. But don't go there if you haven't given a 5-star. Got to be a person of integrity. Give a 5-star review, and then all those gifts are for you. No 5-star review, no gift for you.
There you go. So good. I really appreciate that, Tyler. That was so good. We'll go ahead and get out of here, and then definitely going to go check out the website. If you have not left a review, you cannot go to his website.
it's a firm and held fast rule.
There you go. All right. Thank you, Tyler.
Thank you.